COVID, everyone returning to operation. We are currently running around 98%-99% in the maintenance. So our maintenance availability is going in the up direction, trending in the up direction, and so is our system-wide availability.
Rohan. Thank you, Hannes.
If we can raise any questions at this point, I'd like to start
Dr.
off by
Posner, I see you have your hand up, and then I see Kelly.
Let me ask first, though.
Sure.
The Accessibility Advisory Committee has done a bit of work on elevator buttons and the problems that we've noted, and we've made some recommendations. I don't know if either Mitch or Hennick have seen them. Has staff shared our recommendations on elevator buttons? Carol?
Yes. Mitch and his team are aware of our recommendations, your recommendations. And the last time they visited us, I think it was Gideon that talked about how the newly rehabilitated elevators are now having their buttons in a more logical location so that when you're going up or down, the elevator's buttons are in the right location versus having the ambiguity of pressing the emergency call button or something like that. So they've taken steps to modify what they're doing in the rehabilitation part of their efforts based on the comments that the advisory committee has provided.
Many of us will not be able to visit the stations to check out what the buttons look like. Can someone at least furnish us a picture or pictures of the new arrangements of the elevator buttons, please?
I will attempt to get a drawing while we're on the phone. I believe Gideon has been working with Carol's group, and I think from my understanding, the main differential is the call button will be much lower and will be emboldened in red. They're gonna make it further away from the call button and try to make it more distinct.
Yes, well, that was what we were recommending, but if you can show us pictures now or at least later, we'd appreciate it. Any sure. Other committee members want to discuss the elevator buttons or have any questions related to elevators or
yes, elevators?
Yes,
I do.
Bear with me one moment. Dr. Posner had his hand up, and then Kelly, and then Doris.
And Philippa.
Okay, thank you, Philippa. I'll put you on.
Okay.
Dr. Posner, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Along that same line, you mentioned there are going to be new contracts let, and will the new contracts require that they install the elevators in a consistent manner with the ones that already exist and the new ones, so that we don't run into the same problem we've had before, that all the elevators have different buttons on them in different places?
Correct. So this would be a new specific, this would be added to the specification, so any elevator being replaced or renewed would conform. So they would all look alike and all be in the same location.
Thank you. And hopefully the lighting will still be good.
I just spoke right before we came on the call. I just spoke to upgrading lighting and seeing what we can do to immediately.
Great. Thank you.
We can do.
Kelly?
Kelly?
Sorry, I'm muting myself. I'm curious, two things. One, y'all might not be able to address specifically, but my first question would be, in light of the audit that was done that found some holes within the safety of WMATA, have y'all made any adjustments to what you're doing related to the elevators and escalators in light of that new audit that was done related to safety that came out at some point last week? That's my first question.
So I'll let Hennick answer that because he is our compliance manager and he is our point. point man every audit that comes across.
So to be specific, which audit that way we are in the same page, which you're referring to the last week's audit report for?
Correct. The one where the top official that was reassigned after the safety
right.
oversights. Okay. And then also, I think it was overseen by the federal commission that was put in place to review WMATA.
Right. But I think if I'm not mistaken, that was of the Rail Operations Control Center. I'm not sure how much they interact with ELOC.
Right. That was my, I just wanted to make sure we are on the same page. So that audit refers to our main call center, OCC. Our elevators and escalators call center does not work in conjunction with the elevators. We actually work hand in hand with the Washington Metropolitan Safety Committee. Any recommendations they have, we immediately implemented. Currently, we don't have any open action item with any of the oversight committees. So whenever there's a concern that comes in, we tend to address it immediately.
Okay. And thank you. And then the second part of my question, I don't know if y'all would be the right ones, but just to follow up from a point that had come up last week and something that we see a lot of times is obviously inevitably an escalator, an elevator will be down that necessitates the need for shuttle service. We've, you know, had people complain about the access to shuttles during these elevator outages. Can you speak a little bit to what's being done right now, especially in light of COVID, for the shuttle services when elevators are down?
So I really think that maybe OCC would have a better response. We support them. We speak with them on a regular basis, especially when there's a shuttle bus that needs to be requested. We, our EOC should be in constant contact with them. I do know there was a complaint that came across my desk. I want to say it was last week about somebody who was in the system that may have gotten errant information that we no longer offer shuttle bus service. That is true, and we're still investigating. We're investigating that because that I believe a station manager told that to a customer, and that was a complaint that came to our group that we're still investigating. But rest assured that there is still shuttle service.
Okay.
Right. So let me. Can I add to that? And so, yeah, you're talking about Heidi's complaint, and that's the one I forwarded to Mitch. And Mitch is investigating on his side. But I could tell you that, yes, Heidi was given, and perhaps other customers were given, wrong information. There was a problem with some direction that had been handed down to certain people. Wasn't ran through the ADAP office or my office, but we've made it very, very clear that shuttle service is always available for a down elevator. And I've made it clear to my colleagues that during this period of time and perhaps beyond, Metro Access is available to provide support when Metro Bus cannot immediately respond to an elevator outage. But the information Heidi was given was wrong, and we've addressed that with the appropriate leadership members as well as the individual employee who we believe spoke to Heidi.
Okay, and then I guess, I'm as a wheelchair user, I've had situations, you know, in the past where similar messaging has been communicated. So I think we, you know, just need to keep that on our radar as far as what station managers are willing to do to assist in getting a shuttle to when there's an elevator outage. And I think also part of Heidi's complaint was related to the signage or alerting of elevators down. Do you have any updates in that respect?
Can you research that? Can you respond to, I know you had looked into when it was posted versus when it may have been on the PIDs.
Okay, yes.
Sorry, this is the interpreter. Who was speaking, and do you mind saying your comment again?
Hi, this is Kelly Simino, and along the same lines
After you, Kelly.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It was a male's voice.
Oh, Mitch Nietzsche?
Thank you.
No problem. Okay. This is Henok Johannes. So what we've looked into is from the elevator being out of service and messages displayed, it goes into our outside website, and that website gets refreshed every 15 minutes. So it gets data pulled every 15 minutes. So at no time, the maximum duration that we can anticipate between message display versus the out of service elevator is going to be less than 15 minutes. But we are thinking that is probably where that complaint came in. The patron on that case boarded the train while the elevator was operational. But by the time she went to the destination station, in this case, Metro Center, we've looked at it that the elevator was out of service. So that is the time. Once the elevator is out of service, immediately we open a work order, and that work order is dynamically gets displayed on the internal and external websites.
Is that okay, Kelly?
Okay. Those are my questions for now. Thank you.
Okay.
Next.
Thank you. This is Anu. Just to keep, just to be on the mindful of the time, we are at 4:30. So if we can just stick to the questions pertaining to Alice, that would be helpful. The next person with the question is Doris. Doris, go ahead.
Oh, God. Okay. I'm sorry. Am I on?
Yes, you are.
Okay. Okay, I have two questions. One is comment related to the buttons. I would implore you that if you're going to make improvements to the elevator buttons at subway stations, that you please make first priority the outdoor call buttons, because that has posed significant problems to the health and safety of people with disabilities and probably without, because there had been incidences, including ones that I've been involved in, where I was stuck outside for more than, 20 minutes in the middle of horrible winter weather. And so we need to fix those buttons as first priority, in my view. Secondly, with regard to the Vienna station, you mentioned that the Vienna elevator is down now, and I am astounded that we would reopen that station with the elevator down. I'd like to know how long it's going to take to bring it back up. It's the only way between the mezzanine and the platform, and it's a heavily used station, although I recognize the pandemic is a different situation, maybe in terms of demand. I'd like to know why it was opened with an elevator down and how long it's going to take to get it back up, and what shuttle service or whatever is available, and from which station, is it Dunloring or someplace else?
So this is Mitch Nietzsche. It's the elevator in the garage, and there's a redundant elevator next to it. So it's not the station elevator. It's the one in the garage. And it was scheduled long before.
It's where? I'm sorry?
I'm sorry. It's the elevator inside the garage.
Oh, it's a garage elevator. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. I didn't hear that. So you took it, my question.
Yes. And this was,
as far as I'm concerned.
Believe it or not, this was actually scheduled before the work on the orange line. So.
And as Mitch said, in the garages, we have redundant elevators. We usually have two elevators. Therefore, if one is being rehabbed, the other one's still operational.
And the only other thing I want to mention is in the escalator renovations, I've raised a number of times at these committee meetings, and I've seen emails from consumers about this, that the new escalators, and I've had experience at numerous stations, have such glaring lights that they diminish any contrast that one would have at top and bottom, especially to be able to see the markings on at the end so that you can step off if you're a person with a significant vision impairment. So, because the edges at top and bottom are not as detectable by a cane, the cane doesn't get stopped by it. And if you don't realize, if it takes you a minute to recognize the change in the tactile surface, they're dangerous because the new escalators are running faster than the older escalators as well. So I would ask you to try to look at that and put whatever is necessary in the whatever we can get to make that safer and for the user.
We get the point.
Yeah, I'll just let the committee know, though.
Yeah, I mean, because I can't even use, I don't use for, the last time I was using the gallery place, not the gallery place, I'm sorry, the Judiciary Square escalators, when they put in those new escalators and made them operational, I have absolutely been forced to use the elevators when I don't necessarily have to. Because I consider them dangerous.
As a side note, we are working with the lighting project that have increased the lighting in the station, and they're starting to work on some of our escalators. I know they're doing work right now at court.
They don't need an increase. They need
a decrease. I think once your ambient light comes up, your ambient light comes up, that it will not be as bright focus in one area. And the reason that the lighting is so bright is because it's so dark in there. They need to increase the
lighting is glaring. It's from the lighting and it's glaring up in your face. I have enough vision to know that. I have enough useful vision and I know where it's coming from. It's glaring right up in your face, just like the footlights in the 7000 series, but worse.
I'm just letting you know what's some of what's going on. I just wanted you to have some background that I think some of the reason that the lighting is so bright is because
I'm talking about going down from the outside, even at night.
Okay.
Excuse me. This is Anu Doris. I would request for you to please say your name.
I realize.
So that we can help the interpreters. Thank you. I do see Barbara. You have your hand up, and I'm hoping.
I was on. Philippa was on the list
yes,
too.
Yes, Philippa. Go ahead. I apologize. Go ahead.
Okay. Okay. My question is, he mentioned that the elevator call button is going to be red, and I wanted to know what is it contrasting with, because red against black is not always the easiest to see. Orange or yellow or something like that would be better for low vision. So I wanted to know what the contrast is.
So I believe
red,
the
button bezel, against what color?
The bezel around the button is red, and it's and it contrasts with the button, which should be stainless.
It should be what?
It should be stainless, but I don't have the drawing in front of me. I'm asking for the drawing now. Carol, would you happen to know that?
Carol, you're muted.
Yes.
Sorry, this is Carol. The contrast is with stainless steel.
All right, that's what I thought.
Oh, okay. I guess I'll let other people comment on that.
Thank you, Philippa. We will take the last question on this topic. Barbara, I see your hand up. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I have a question regarding that, plus some comments, if I may. This is Barbara. Could you please repeat what you said, sir? What will be the interior of the cab of the elevator, and then what would the button physically be in color?
So we're talking about the call stations, and they will be stainless. I believe the button is stainless with a light in it, and the bezel around it the halo around it, or whatever you may call it, is red. So, and it's further separated. It's not close to the call button. So to differentiate it, it has a red halo, and it's lower to where the call button is. And the idea was to separate it.
Okay, so what color is the button itself that people would press?
I believe it's stainless.
So you're saying that the interior of the cab is stainless and the button itself is stainless, correct, with the red outline?
On the inside of the cab, yes.
Okay, may I recommend that, again, as people just mentioned, that you have the actual button that people would touch to press to call for an emergency, that should be a different color because they're trying to locate it visually a lot of times, and there is no differentiation. They're not going to know exactly. It would be very much more helpful if you made it, let's just say, a white, if you could. Maybe when you have some options, present that to Carol, and then Carol can get with those of us who have the limited sight, and we could help you from there. I would like to also mention about the handbook. Maybe this is jumping a little bit too far ahead, but when you guys are ready for this, I would like to request that this information that you're talking about, having the buttons in a standard place from now on, and I really love that. Thank you so much for having that. If you could put that in the handbook, if there is one, actually that's for Metro Access, but put that in a place, maybe on the website on where you have the accessibility part where people might look to see, and tell the travel trainers to inform, they get some folks who might be into it, help, you know, have that information be helpful for them. Mention that they are in these areas and, you know, approximately 50% of the stations or whenever you get to a significant amount that have it done, that would be super great. I would also like to recommend that those buttons be backlit as opposed to just the color of the button, because a lot of times people are leaning forward when they're trying to see the buttons, and that will create a shadow, and then they're not able to see. Not always, but that would be super, super helpful. And then on the escalators, there are the green and red lit indicators before you get on. And I was wondering if you could follow that same template what you're using for the elevators and make it those standard in all places on the bottoms of the escalator, well, tops, whatever the case may be. And then, if possible, make those lit indicators a little bit larger, so because that is a very high traffic area, especially during the rush hours, and it would, people do look for those. And you can also tell tactically, but by that point people behind you are going to be a little upset. So thank you so much for coming. It's very, very great news.
Okay, thank you, Barbara. Did you want to make any comments, or Hanuk?
No, thanks for having us.
Okay. Thank you for coming. Doris, I see you had a hand, your hand up. We will have to come back to that because we do have our guest speaker for the next topic, Mr. Goings for Metrorail announcements. Mr. Goings, go ahead, please.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon.
Well, that's a hard act to follow. I'm sure you got some questions for me as well behind the announcements that deal with elevator outages. I think a couple of things that were brought to my attention was station manager outages and the announcements that the train operator makes when it comes to elevator outages. So I can tell you what station manager is supposed to do. Would that be better for me, or should I just let you ask questions about what you need to know?
Why don't you tell us what we should know?
Okay, that's not a problem. But the station manager is supposed to say, what's supposed to happen is that somebody, the elevator goes out of service, he reports that one to the ROIC department, right? All right, they in turn lets him know that he is to advise a customer, any customer, that the shuttle bus service is available to help navigate around the outage. And the station manager should be telling him it may take up to 30 minutes to arrive. All right, and the station manager should be trying to verify the customer's destination and ask the customer, would they like the shuttle service? And if the customer would like the shuttle service, then he goes in a couple of options in there. The train operator prior to that, well, once they find out on the train, they make these announcements every 30 minutes in the ROCC to train operators if they're elevator outages. The operator should be making these announcements prior to the station that's affected, okay? That's the theory and the practice behind it. What I understand lately, I got a couple complaints that they're not making that. So what I did was I talked to some managers at ROCC, and I informed them that they need to make to assure that these operators make the announcements, because otherwise, we put our customers in a bad situation. They're not given the information so they can make a good decision. So that's in general. So give me what you want to ask me.
Questions, anybody? Comments? Well, that's unusual.
Anthony, yeah, I see your hand up.
Go ahead. Thank you, Mr. Goings. This is Anthony Oberg. I just want to ask, so I understand that that's what's supposed to happen. What about the situations, or what do you recommend that people do about the situations in which maybe the message that is supposed to come over the loudspeaker isn't, you can't hear it very well? Or maybe the speaker doesn't work good in your train car and you wouldn't know that. So I understand that there's a protocol for what's supposed to happen, but what is the best way for us to get you information so that we can, try to help the situation? Because I know when I was riding the train more regularly, it was very rare that I would hear, even when there were elevator outages, that they would say it. And so I just don't know what the best way to sort of report those are.
Well, we have, you can continue to use the customer service lines, for reporting those. They have a new protocol. They have to be answered within 5 days. So if you could continue that, the way they've set this up for our rail department is that you as a customer make your complaint or your suggestions. And it automatically, when you pick a division, you pick a station, it automatically locks into a division. So that means that there is an agent assigned to that case, but it goes directly to that division. Okay, so, and in my crew, I have two people who monitor. We monitor for all the rail transportation. So we try to stay on that protocol, make sure that it's being met within 5 days. So it may go up to 10, but that's only because they can't interview an employee because he's on vacation or sick, whatever the case may be. But that is what I do. I monitor the customer complaint side. And sometimes it doesn't come directly to us. Sometimes it goes through another department. But in most cases, I wind up getting it. Is that right, David? So, because I get a lot from David Schaefer. So if you continue using the customer service line, that would help out a lot. Or even talk to David.
Yeah, or copy me on it too, because I will make sure it's followed up on.
Thank you.
No problem.
Any other questions? If not, thank you, Mr. Goings.
This is Darnie, so I do have a question.
Oh, Darnie, yes.
My question is, how quickly and what is the procedure when the elevator from the, between the platform and the escalator or elevator going outside, how often or how frequently is that posted? Because sometimes that's not posted and people in wheelchairs can't get out. And a lot of times they can't get even get to the station manager or whatever to let them know that that might be trapped because it might not be a two-way station.
It may like not be a
two-way station. Like if you go on a GW or something like that inside.
And you're saying
the inside elevator, the elevator from the train to the platform to go out.
And you're saying the alarm system doesn't work in the elevator?
Well,
if you got an emergency and you push the button, see, there's alarm, you know, that automatically rings a bell at the kiosk for the station.
If the elevator, I mean, that's working, but suppose you're in between, like if you're in a station where that, well, I guess you could get to the elevator. Maybe the elevator still works. But usually this, you need to get to the station manager who will tell you which station to go to so that you can cross over or whatever.
Okay.
So do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think I do now.
Because a lot of times that's not posted and you may not know it until you get to the station. So
yeah, that is not posted. That may be something I may need to talk to a few people about, because unless you're a regular user and know how to get to the other side, you probably wouldn't. So that's, okay. So you're looking for access or some kind of direction on how to get to an elevator when one is down within the station. Is that what you're asking?
When the inside of the station,
yeah. Yes. Inside, okay. All right, I'll take a look at that and I'll see what we come up with. How about that?
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
This is Anthony again. I just want to follow up on that just to say that if there is any way you can add more information for things like this that only a normal, regular rider would know, and have that posted somewhere so that we can direct people to it when they ask, that would be very helpful. So as much as you can fit in terms of this kind of information that Darnie's is talking about would be great.
Yeah. Okay, so you want the information how to travel within the station when one elevator is out. Okay, I got that. All right, anybody else?
If not, thank you, Mr. Goings, again. And we
not a problem. I'm here for you.
Right. You always have been. Thank you again. The next speaker is... Oh, are we up to the station lighting update? Is that where you're up to?
No, Chair Calabria. The next topic... I'm sorry, this is Anu. The next topic is Metro Bus Operating Control Center regarding shuttle service. And we have Mr. Gregory Edwards to speak about the topic. Mr. Edwards, if you could unmute yourself.
Yes, okay.
Well, welcome to the BRS meeting.
Thank you, good afternoon, everyone. Just to, briefly talk about the bus shuttles. I mean, we do a number of different types of shuttles. So I will piggyback a little bit off of what I heard Mr. Goings going into in terms of just daily knowledge or operations of shuttles if needed for customers who need shuttle bus service. What our practice has been is, as you heard Mr. Goings said, when a customer alerts him when they know that an elevator is out for a short period of time and it's not understood to be a long outage, they would contact our OCC and we would organize, if we have available, a bus to come over to the station and transport the customer to the next station. We also utilize our street supervisors to help in that manner. Our first look at any available resources would be what we call strategic buses that we keep on the street. We would try to implement those to assist in an urgent right-of-way manner. We also utilize shuttles for the elevator outages that we have. Like, for example, I heard mentioning the Huntington Station shuttle, where the North and South shuttle are currently out of service or escalators. As you guys may be aware out there, we utilize our Metro buses, which have the lift capabilities at the front door. We make sure that every bus that we put over there has that capability. When we use shuttle buses for capital improvement projects that we know are going to be long-term, and long-term is probably greater than a day, 2 days a week, what we've done with those is set up directly through our divisions. If we have available, when we know in advance, we can schedule buses to be positioned at the stations that we know are going to be out under capital improvement and be stationed there for the duration, or to the elevators or escalators get to a position where we can mobilize and move back to our regular operations. And then we've also utilized in the past some contracted services. Whenever we have shuttles that involve contractors for some of the nice coach shuttle buses that we have out there, of course, they're not equipped for the type of services that some of our mobility challenged customers have to deal with. So in those situations, we make sure that in the contracts we have vans that are specifically and strategically placed for that purpose to ensure that they can get transported. So I kind of talked about a few different shuttle types. The shuttle that Metrobus would operate, as in the example we have with the Huntington Station right now. There's the emergency process where an elevator is out maybe a short period of time. We get notified through rail that a shuttle, the elevator or escalator is down. We take some action to position a bus there that's available, either using resources we already have on the street, or we would reach out to our divisions to try to get some shuttle support. At a minimum, that delay on those type of scenarios would take about 30 minutes to get a bus in position. And then lastly, there's also CIP, where it's long-term and we know it's gonna be down for a while. Either we will take on that as a Metro bus organization and position a shuttle there, or we've utilized in the past contractors. And then we're also bringing into fold the Metro Access capabilities to assist with the bus, moving mobility of people through from one station to another. I'll take some questions if anybody has any.
Any questions? This is getting more and more surprising. There seem to be no questions. You're lucky. If there are no questions or comments, thank you, Mr. Edwards, and we can move on to the next item.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anu?
Okay, so Chair Calabia, now we are at the topic of station lighting update, and Ms. Lopez and Mr. Schaefer will give us an update, and any public feedback is welcome as well.
Okay, good afternoon. So Metro's made an announcement that all the underground stations have been upgraded, meaning the platforms for underground stations have been updated in lighting. So if you visit our system and you're on a platform, you will notice that they're more evenly lit and brighter and the stations that you have mentioned to us in the past should be fairly well lit now if you have the opportunity to visit them. I think that you mentioned one in particular in the past, I think it was Roslyn, and that has been completed as well. There's been one that is not, an issue is not the platform, it's actually the mezzanine, and it's the Friendship Heights station. And I visited the station and noticed that as you go up the escalator to an area in the mezzanine that actually, it's like a rotunda, it's a circular space, and there's several exits from that space. And there's a transition, a change in lighting levels that creates the makes you feel like it's really dark in there.
It is.
And there has, architecture is going to visit the station to see what they can do because they feel like something has changed in the way that the lighting was designed for that particular location, where perhaps some lighting was improved because it's brighter and somebody in maintenance may have changed it, and that would create the imbalance at that station. So we're going to look into how that could be better lit, and perhaps also the signage moved to the place where the light's actually casting on it versus being in front of the light. I think that that's one of the problems with that station, where the signage is below the light, and when you look at it, you're seeing the light behind it and not the sign, and that creates ambiguity when you're traversing through the space. So we're looking at that, and as soon as we get more information, we will report that.
On Friendship Heights, this is the one, the mezzanine that you're referring to, I think leads to a set of stairs going upwards towards a garage. I think this is the one that Paul Kelly has been waiting for an answer for a couple of years. Did you notice that stairway is so dark?
There is lighting, and he is right. It is darker. It appears to be darker, but there is lighting, and we have reported it so that they would change the light bulbs, etc., that are missing. However, the actual redesign of that is something that we need to look at, because, and that's what I was mentioning, architecture is going to go over there, look at it, and give me some feedback. Because I personally went there with my light meter, and I measured every single lighting area, the whole area with a light meter. And there's some areas where the foot candle level is very low, and there's some areas where you have a where it's much brighter and makes you feel like you're in you're in a dark space as soon as you get off where the focused lighting is. So there has to be, I also noticed that there has been water damage, and they have placed temporary lights on a chain of, just temporary lights. And that could also be creating this darkness on the other side. So that's something that has to be studied and basically designed so that it's all balanced, so that you feel like you're in a continuous space. But your contact, you said who was looking at that?
Paul Kelly.
Okay, yeah. Yes, Mr. Kelly was right. These areas are dark.
Yes, but you're getting an answer from the architects on how to correct that.
Well, not an answer, but we have to come up with a design to resolve the issue.
Okay.
Those same architects have been very, very busy to solve the lighting for the platform level. So now I guess we're transitioning to this part.
Yes. Well, I don't want to linger too much just on the single station, but do you want to tell us more in general about lighting, or is that it?
No, I could read off the list where these upgrades have taken place recently. Metro Center on the side that going to Glenmont has received better lighting. Farragut North again, DuPont Circle, Woodley Park, Cleveland Park, Van Ness, Tenleytown, Friendship Heights, like I said, on the platforms, Bethesda, Medical Center. But those were already done. The newest ones are Forest Glen, McPherson Square, Farragut West, Foggy Bottom, Smithsonian, Capitol South, Potomac Avenue, Mount Vernon Square, Fort Totten, Archives, Courthouse, Clarendon.
Okay, well, any other questions or comments, folks?
I had one.
The hands of Patrick, followed Thank by you. Doris and Barbara. So Patrick, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Anu. Carol, good report. Can you tell me, it sounds like we are ahead of schedule as far as the lighting is concerned. Would you say that?
That's what we have been told, yes. That, okay. that we're able to complete what they were planning on fixing. Now, the things that are left over are the parts where, you know, the specifics of specific stations that may have, that are not typical, such as Friendship Heights.
Right. Would you say that we, I don't know, this is probably not a fair question, would you say we're 80, 85, 90% complete as far as the project?
I cannot venture into a percentage. I'd have to go, I'd have to request specific percentage information from the team.
It'd be kind of fun to get, you know.
Okay.
It's just a good way, because it's such a big project, to know what's outstanding, but knowing what percentage is done. I think we're in very good shape. It would be great for a board type report. Last question has nothing to do with lighting, but I'm going to throw it in there anyway, because I've been asked about it for 2 years, never had an answer. Twinbrook, does it have truncated domes?
Yes.
It does have truncated domes.
Yes, all of our stations do.
Oh, good, okay. How long have they been there at, number of years?
I could actually find out. About when Mr. Blake came about to WMATA, he had all of us go and survey. Actually, we still have one station. The Arlington Cemetery still doesn't have it because it's not rehab, but all of the rest of them do.
So it's been a number of five years then, right?
Yeah. So at least for 5 years, even longer maybe. When he started with WMATA, he sent us all out. It was like an all ADAP effort to go and look at all the stations to make sure we have it all fully documented. And after that, he negotiated an improvement process. I think, I don't know how long it took, but very shortly after that, considering how WMATA gets projects done, most of the stations were completed, and except for Arlington Cemetery.
He's not done then.
Mm-hmm.
You've got one more left to do.
Yes, there's one left. Now, I just remembered because...
99.9% will hold him responsible for the one he doesn't have done yet.
Yes.
Why not? Good. All right. Thank you for that. Appreciate
sure.
that. Okay.
Okay. Patrick, I would lower your hand. Doris, you are next. So go ahead, please.
Doris?
I'm sorry, I had problems unmuting. I'd like to ask about a couple of stations based on the last time I was in them, which was some, 6 months ago. So Metro Center, which you've mentioned, had some real problems right at the middle of the station. If you were getting off a train on the Red Line level and going down to use trains on the lower level, there was a dark area, and the lights seemed to be completely out, and on some occasions dimmed down. And I'm not talking about the old lights now, I'm talking about the new lights. So I'm wondering whether that has been corrected, because it was a navigational issue. And then with regard to Pentagon Station, the lighting looked really good in there, but one of the things that for navigational purposes was problematic was that there was a lighted arch over the middle of the station where the kiosk is, and it was a really great wayfinding. There were signs up there, so it was a really great wayfinding tool to know that you were approaching the fair. What do you call them? The turnstiles. When you were coming from the lower level and trying to find the exit out of the station. So I'm talking about from inside the station going out. And I mentioned those a number of times while the project was still going on, and I'm wondering whether these have been corrected or whether you can look into them. And the last thing I want to mention is that I realize this is not an indoor station matter, but several times I brought up the lighting on the north side of Vienna Station, where one needs to cross over the bus lane. And both the lighting is really bad on that side of the station, and that together with failure to maintain the painted crosswalk makes it very dangerous for people with vision impairments and anybody else who might not see that crosswalk to traverse, you know, getting to a bus from the station. So those are the things lighting-wise that I wanted to inquire about.
Yes, Carol? Unmute.
Carol, you're muted.
Yeah. Carol, you're...
Yes, I'm sorry. In reference to Metro Center, I would assume that if there was an area near a platform that would have been taken care of, but we can check. Then the one about Pentagon Station, I wasn't sure what the issue was, that you said that near the fare gates it was dark.
Am I still on?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Go ahead, Doris.
Yeah, okay. What I'm saying is that before putting the new lights in, there was, I think the lighting was mostly using fluorescent lights, but there was a bank of lights that were over the archway as you exit the fare collection, you know, the fare gates. And it was very helpful because it was a contrasting color to any of the lighting in the station, so that you could tell when you were approaching the exit to the station, where the, you know, get yourself ready to use the fare gates. So I was just wondering whether that lighted arch will be replaced, relighted or something, because last time I was in there, it wasn't the new lighting from down below. The new background lighting was put in there, and it was very good, but it washed out the lighting that framed the archway in and out of the station.
Can you look into that, Carol?
Yes, we can do that. And then the last one, you said the north side of Vienna Station, that the crosswalk is bad to the bus.
North side, the north side.
The north Where side.
The north well, side, yeah.
There's no, I don't recall customers
I
having
brought it
to
up for four
cross.
Or 5 years now. It's very dangerous. There is the walkway from the mezzanine part of the station, the bridge that goes across 66 is very well lighted. But once you exit that station, if you're coming out in the dark, which could be as early as, 5:30 or 6 o'clock at certain times of year, it's completely dark. And as you're facing the parking lot and the circle where the buses are, if you have to cross over to catch a bus out on, I guess that's Nutley, and if you have to cross over through the parking lot to get to a bus, or if you're crossing to get a taxi at the taxi stand, it is nearly impossible to see the if you have a vision impairment, it's nearly impossible to see the crosswalk.
Okay.
It's very, very difficult, and because it doesn't have a distinctive curb ramp, it's an old style curb ramp that's not distinctive. Yeah, it's dangerous because the bus is coming down the bus lane, could hit you at any moment when you're trying to cross over. So.
Okay, we will check that station as well.
Very good.
They've made the excuse in the past that they're not renovating that side yet, but this has been too long, and it continues to be a danger. And if somebody was crossing there, even using a wheelchair or a scooter or something, they might not be seen, and they might be crossing. It's not that they might not be seen; they might be crossing in the wrong place, and the bus wouldn't realize they were crossing a legitimate crosswalk.
I think Carol has that, and Rico has a question. Hello? Rico has a question.
This is Rico. I do not have a question.
Okay. Oh, no? Okay.
Thank you. Barbara, I know you've had your hand up patiently waiting, so go ahead.
Thank you. This is Barbara Millville again. And I would like to thank you for addressing Friendship Heights lighting. That is a very challenging area. I would also like to add that if possible, I would like to have signage at eye level in that circular hallway, because a lot of times there's a lot of doctor's offices in there. People coming in there once or twice a year, they kind of forget which way they need to go to come out on Wisconsin Avenue there. Right now, the signs are directly above the entrances to those exits. I want to thank Metro for the lighting. So far, it looks super. It's very, very challenging to accommodate all the people with low vision who are riding. A lot of people see differently, even though they have same acuity. And so the softer lighting that you guys have chosen is very warm, and it's doing the best job. Not everybody is going to be happy with this, but there's pretty good chance that there's going to be nobody really who absolutely hates it. So again, thank you for that. Before the architects transfer over to another project, I would like to remind you guys that there is still some more work to be done. The lighting at the transfer station, so we're only talking a handful or so, Some examples are a metro center when you're at the bottom and you want to take an escalator up to the red line. There is lights right adjacent to the bottom of that escalator on the platform. Those are have been chronically very difficult for people who use their site and are able to see the signs. They're not illuminated. They're not backlit. It's just the plain old sign. And we have requested in the past for you folks to make those backlit, or you will need to be adding some lighting into there, because I've talked with Kelly in the power department at Metro, and she has said that we were hoping that the ambient lighting would solve that problem, and I think this needs to be addressed. I have volunteered for someone to shadow me there, and don't know when is a good time for you guys, but I'm still offering that even during the COVID times in effort to keep this little train of ours going, this lighting train. So there's that. Right now it is, people cannot see the signs, and it's a very dangerous area, especially during the rush hours. I want to thank you for recognizing that the cemetery does not have the truncated domes. It's been noted by our group. And as far as Patrick's comment about the percentage of station's lighting, that would be a little challenging. I wanted to commend Metro for, without anybody's prompting, it was really great to, not that I really want to have anybody suffer through the long platform work that was conducted this summer on the Orange Line stations. It was really awesome that Metro took the opportunity and updated that lighting. So that's what's making the percentage of completed work a little more challenging, is because now Metro has added the outdoor stations. So we're really, really looking forward to seeing what you guys do on that. So, and that's all I have.
Thank you, Barbara. Carol, you have what she's talking about, right?
Absolutely, and thank you. This is Carol, and thank you, Barbara, for all your comments. I've noted them, and we will follow up and looking for the issues.
Thank you.
Yes, we have on the
agenda. Is Mary Beth before voicing for Rico?
Go ahead, Mary Beth.
We have a question.
Rico, go ahead with the question, please.
Give me just 1 second, Rico. I'm trying to pin you. Go ahead. So in the service for door-to-door on the application, it does not see a place for deaf and hard of hearing. There's no word there in the application that communicates that. So why doesn't it say that? I have no idea.
What application?
I think he's talking about the Metro Access application.
David, sure.
Yeah, and this is David Schaefer, sorry.
The application, this is Mary Beth, we're clarifying. If you guys could just give us a minute, it's the word on the application that you asked the doctor for door-to-door service. There's nothing on there that checks a box that says I am deaf, hard of hearing, deaf blind. So the paperwork is there's nothing on there. So how, like, what do I do if I'm trying to communicate that from my doctor to
Well, certainly that would be described in the area where it talks about what the disability is, but
this is Mary Beth. We're still, I'm so sorry. If you'll just give us a minute, David, we're just clarifying. He uses door-to-door service. That's what he was stating. Mm-hmm. And he does mean Metro Access, the van. And he said, there's no place to mark down that he is deaf or hard of hearing. So if I'm trying to fill out the application and I'm deaf blind, I mean, there's nothing, I'm not going to be able to see that. And so in the application, I mean, what do we as deaf people, or what do we do, right? If we give our doctor this communication, this particular piece of paper to communicate it, we're stuck. And so I'm just wondering about that.
Well, that should be, that would be able to be stated in text in the document. I think it's question 15, 16, or 17. But certainly we could look at putting a checkbox in for that. I tried to look at it today to see what was on the website, but our website was having some issues. I do know that we did make it fully accessible as well. But we can look toward adding that box. That shouldn't be too hard. I'll talk it over with Chris Colbert.
Okay, thank you. David, you were scheduled to be on at 5:15 with a report. Do you have any report? If not, we have other items. But
Just a couple things. I know Steve Kaffin has been asking for several months now about the AVL and the next bus data. I was informed today that we did put that back in place for the 80% of the routes that are running under the current schedule, and that they're hoping to expand it to 90%. So as of August 26th, that should be have been working. Does anybody have any information to the contrary?
David, I've been using that, and I found it to be up and running. Actually, the last 3 weeks, I haven't noticed any situations where it's been down, which is good, because there have often been times where it's been up and down. So this is good. I noticed there's one bus that I'll speak about a little bit later that has initiated longer service than it had initially. That's the 43 bus. And I've noticed that has not yet been, the new service has not yet been added. But in general, you're absolutely right. The system is operating much better than it did the first 3 months of the pandemic. And I think from what I've seen, without exception.
Didn't Jim Hamry speak about that last week? Respond to your question about 42?
Not really. He did. He gave a 5-second answer. You recall he had a very limited amount of time after his presentation to respond to questions. And so, you know, it was as extensive as I think he could do at the time.
I'll check with him to double check on that and let you know.
All right. But in answer to your question to me, yes. The system is definitely up and running, and I found it to be pretty accurate.
Okay. Great. Good.
Yeah. Anything else, David?
No, unless anybody has any issues for me to look into.
This is Rico. I have one more question, please.
Go ahead. Sure.
Uh, I am still very frustrated with the fact that the bus drivers, the bus operators, still are not wearing masks. They are saying that they are, I mean, that they don't have to wear them, that they're not required to wear them, but they're driving public transportation. And it doesn't make sense to me. And so I saw it this morning and on the X2, and I was like, I'm a person, I have to wear a mask, and that's fine, but the bus driver themselves are not wearing masks. And so I was like, I'm just confused about that. Like, I was confused about the deaf and hard of hearing thing on the application. I'm confused why the bus, what is the bus policy? I'm just, it's very David, confusing.
David, yes.
Very confusing.
David.
The policy is that all employees, whether they're bus, rail, or sitting in an office, have to have a mask on at all times when they're in contact with other people. So that directive I've seen going out almost weekly to all operations personnel. If the operator is not wearing a mask, get me the bus number and time and route, and we will deal with that employee. So I
very good.
So, but I need that information. The X2 is helpful, but I need to know specifically either what time you boarded and what direction and what place, or the bus number.
Thank you.
Just a minute. Just a minute, please.
Sure.
I got on the bus this morning at 10. Mm-hmm. And I used the X2, and I was going from Union Station at 10 o'clock. And I saw the bus driver, but where were you going to? You're going to where? From Union Station. It was okay, so I was going from Union Station to home on 17th and G Street Northeast. And so that was the route. This was happening at 10 o'clock. It was on the X2, and it was extremely odd. And it was 10 this morning, and that's where I was going. I was going from Union Station to 17th and G Street.
Mm-hmm. Rico.
H, 17th and H.
Rico, if we could repeat again what David said. As you know, each bus has a particular number, a specific number. You have to get the specific number of the bus as well as the other details that you've given us.
Well, that can be hard to see. I think that's enough information. If I know the time and place that he boarded and what direction, there would only be one bus that satisfies that criteria. So,
no, I don't remember the bus number. I don't remember the bus number.
Okay, well, if you could find it the next time. You know.
Yeah.
Tito, could I?
Is there any other thing, David, that you
No.
If not, we have less than a half hour, and we have to vote on the board letter.
This is Rico. Can you tell me where the bus number is located?
David?
They're right by the door. To be more specific, and I can't see them myself, so somebody else will have to answer that question.
Anu, go ahead,
Anu.
this is Anu.
The number, right? Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Hey, everyone, this is the interpreter. If we could just take a little turn and say their names before we talk.
Let's go ahead, please.
Okay, Chris Blake. one place you could find the bus number, and you should probably wait until you board the bus. You can see it certainly on the outside, but you should be able to see the number right near or right above the mirror in the center of the bus aisle above the driver. That should be the location where you can find the bus number. So if you see a driver not wearing a mask, you look at the center of the bus right underneath the ceiling. There should be a four-digit number right there that you can record along with the other information.
And there's also a number outside the bus, correct?
That is correct. Right.
Where is the number outside of the bus?
Yes, there is a number outside the bus, and that's usually, from the passenger standpoint, right above the door the front door. And also, if the bus passes you, I want to say it's on the back of the bus at the top, but I can't remember if it's on the right or the left, but it's right at the top of the back of the bus, on the right side or the left side. So, but the main thing you could always remember, though, when you see the driver's not wearing the mask, it's usually when you're on the vehicle, so it might be easier to look at the center of the vehicle underneath the ceiling.
Okay. Now, if we could turn to the board letter, we have to...
Chair Calabria, this is Anu. Sorry, I'm going to interrupt.
Okay, thank you very much. This is Rico.
Thank you. Doris, do you have your hand up? Is it from prior? Do you just, I can floor it for you if you like.
It's related to what was just being discussed. And that is, just to ask David, my recollection is that the reduced fare application does not include hearing impairment or deaf blindness, hearing impairment, deafness, or deaf blindness. It does definitely, I believe, include vision impairment, but, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but if it doesn't, it should. And the other question is, I can't remember, about a year ago or maybe a little bit longer, we were told what the threshold was in terms of an audiometric exam for being classified as eligible and for reduced fare and or metro access. Do you recall what that is? So that's two questions. One, whether on the reduced fare application it doesn't include hearing impairment, I think it should, and the other was the eligibility criteria for hearing impairment.
Well, on the reduced fare, the designation for hearing impairment would be reflected in the diagnosis code that goes on the document that the doctor has to put in there.
For reduced fare? Because
yes, they require a diagnosis code for the disability, and that would be one of them.
I didn't recall seeing it, though, but that's... Like Rico. Okay. And what is the?
I don't recall the exact
threshold of hearing.
Threshold. I know it was around. It's around a 70% loss, but I don't recall what the audio specifications are for it.
Well, it would be something like either 40 dB or 60 dB or something like that. And I'm
right.
Really curious about that because that can tell me a lot about. Who is eligible and who's not eligible. So I really appreciate that information.
I'll find that out.
Hello, this is Carol Lopez, if I might interact. I have the reduced fare application in front of me. And there's a lot of information. There's a guidelines for healthcare professionals. One, non-ambulatory. Two, semi-ambulatory. Three, amputation. Four, stroke. And et cetera, et cetera. And then 8, deaf of or hard of hearing. 9, epilepsy. 10, developmental or learning disabilities. And it goes on. So I don't think it's excluded.
No, it's just that she wants the dB level, and I don't recall it.
Oh, okay. No, but I wanted to clarify that, but for somebody to certify that there is a disability, there is a section that talks about deaf or hard of hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And oh, okay.
Okay, that's good, but you don't have
the 70 decibels in both ears. Okay, an individual with a pure tone average greater than 70 decibels in both ears, regardless of use of hearing aids.
70 decibels?
Mm-hmm.
Without consideration of hearing aids.
Mm-hmm.
Without amplification.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I would be concerned about 70 decibels because people with a threshold, I do have a degree in speech pathology and audiology, so mm-hmm. I would be concerned about not including people whose thresholds are average, because it's an average threshold. Their average threshold is 50 or 55. That's a considerable loss because even speech, the threshold for speech is down at 40 dB. So, and the threshold for just hearing any sound is between 0 and 25. So somebody who's at 50 or 55 on the average across frequencies has a pretty significant hearing impairment. I know because I've had one.
Doris, we can't change that. It's set by the federal regulations that establish the reduced fare program.
Well, maybe it's something to check into, please.
Yeah, okay. Those are reflected by federal regulations. I will verify.
Well, then I wouldn't even count. Then I wouldn't even count.
Right.
This is 55 for all averages across the board, and believe you me, it's significant.
Yeah, it's a high standard.
This is B.
Dr. B.
Yes, hi. I just wanted to address Doris's point. Oftentimes, Doris, when you have that, the healthcare provider also provides this additional information because it's an area for them to add the code and fill out additional information on that customer. So if you have a situation where their dB level is at 55, the healthcare provider can provide that information on the reduced fare application.
Yeah, you know what? I appreciate that. The only thing I would suggest is that, you know, just the average Joe who has, and this includes seniors who might not think of themselves as having hearing impairment, but even though they're wearing hearing aids, that I think the average Joe might not think about saying to their audiologist, I need you to spell out why this is significant, you know, because when you order up an audiogram as proof of qualifications for something, they just send you the audiogram without comment. So.
So, Doris, you know, it'd be.
Yeah, I just wanted to make that point. That was it.
Yes, and I'm saying that you should make the point in writing, and we could provide it as a record. If you could submit it, we'll attach it in writing, and you can repeat it again and press it again. But at least we'll have specifics on in writing of what you're talking about. We have less than 20 minutes to go, and the board letter has to be dealt with. Phil, you want to brief us on the board letter and have us vote on it?
Well, I added information. This is Phil Posner. I added information to the original letter, sent it out, and I've gotten some feedback from Anthony and from Patrick. And so I would make a motion that, with Anthony's suggestion that I fix the grammar, that we approve the letter. The other thing, to kill two birds with one stone, at the board meeting last Thursday, the Finance Committee, there was a lot of debate about what they're going to do when they run out of money in January. And they're setting up public hearings for the public to be told what reductions in service are being proposed. Initially, this Wednesday, there's a special board meeting where they're going to approve the motion that was passed at the Finance Committee to go back to front door boarding and paying the fare on the buses. And so you might want to discuss that a little bit later as to what you want to do about the smart front door boarding. But that will not be implemented until January. The front door boarding and the collection of fares again. And all of the other changes to buses that you read about in the paper are going to take place in January following public hearings. And the public hearings will be virtual. I've made a request to them that they be done as separate hearings for each jurisdiction so that everybody doesn't have just one shot with 2,000 people complaining about their bus routes. So I've requested that they do a virtual hearing for Virginia, a virtual hearing for Maryland, and a virtual hearing for the district.
Could you incorporate that in the letter?
Yes.
And if we could see that, we could vote on it now. But
yes. We sent that letter out already. You sent it out on Monday, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Yes. Excellent.
Can we have a vote on second?
Do I hear
a second on that?
Oh, thank you, Patrick. Motion to approve. Hearing no objections, the letter is approved.
Thank you.
Can I mention too that as a result of the RAC meeting in which the chair of WMATA board himself took part, and also from some of what I heard about the board meeting, I learned a couple of things that could apply to us. One is that the RAC has a board liaison. Maybe we should try and request to have a board liaison, someone who sits with us at each meeting from the board. The other thing is that the RAC has a Facebook. I haven't seen the Facebook, and apparently the remaining members since Colin left were not able to affect any changes on the Facebook. But apart from that, perhaps we could consider having a Facebook for the Accessibility Advisory Committee. Patrick, you've been a member of both groups for some times. Had they had a board liaison in the past? And do you know anything about the Facebook page?
Yeah, I will say they have had a board liaison for number of years, but at the same time, we had Christian Kent as AGM, so we may want to probably discuss that on a list or something like that. And I think we've done well. It would be nice to be able to have the, you know, Phil, this is more in your league than mine, the GM and the chair of the board come and speak to us as they've done in the past. I think that would be appropriate.
Actually, that's on our agenda. There's an open invitation right now for Mr. Smedberg to come visit us and for Mr. Whitfield to come visit us. I had requested that not occur before October or November because I wanted to let them move forward with their Finance Committee meetings and what's happening with the budget. Some of the history with the RAC, and Patrick will remember, they were about to be eliminated 2 years ago because they didn't have real direction as to what they were doing and how many subcommittees and how much staff time was being occupied by the RAC. And so there was an investigation carried out by the board. They asked Christian Dorsey to be their board liaison, and there was a very effective reorganization of the RAC as far as efficiency goes, and they're under specific guidelines of what they are allowed to and not allowed to do because of the cost and return on investment, to use a government phrase. And so we're doing very well with our staff. Ms. Lopez is wonderful. Mr. Blake is wonderful. We don't have to tell you how wonderful Anu is. So we're doing pretty well without a specific board liaison. And what we have done is invited various members of the board to come talk to us about specific issues in Virginia or in the district or in Maryland, if those are issues that we were dealing with. So I think we're in very good shape. The Facebook page was set up by the former chair of the RAC, who is a Facebook aficionado, and nobody else on the RAC knows how to use it right now. So I'm not sure about it. And I can tell you, the current chair of Metro Access, of this committee, has been banned from Facebook. And so I not only don't have access to it, I'm delighted I don't have access to it. I was banned to it because someone in Ethiopia stole my identity and signed into the Facebook. And so I think we're probably better off without a Facebook page.
I was going to say, Dr. Phil, you and the president are only two I know who've been banned.
Exactly. And probably I'm Ethiopian.
Gotcha. But also, if I may add about the liaison, if you will, keep in mind, the AAC, you report directly to the board. So I'm not sure what a liaison will do for you at this point in time. While there is protocol in how you speak to whom, and if you're representing the AAC, it should go through the chair or what have you. But the fact of the matter is, there are no bounds, at least none placed by this current iteration of the leadership of Access Services, prohibiting communication or expression of opinion from you, the AAC, to the board. What we're doing in a lot of ways is being your liaison to all of Metro. We're providing the staff support, but another person in the room, I'm not sure that's going to get you any quicker where you have direct access through phone and email, I guess primarily email, and of course your monthly report to the board, as well as the reports, the minutes of each meeting, AAC, BRS, as well as MAS. So I would say in a lot of ways, we serve as your liaison to all of Metro to get you the information you need to formulate your opinion, to communicate directly to the board. That's kind of how this has been established. And I think I appreciate the kind words, Dr. Phil, and on my behalf and the entire team, but we certainly, you've heard me say this plenty of times, advocate. We certainly support your right to advocate positions, even if they may seem contrary to what management is thinking. We've never tried to stop that dialogue between you and the board whom you report directly to.
And the other thing that I would add, Mr. Blake and Phil, is that along with the additional oversight came additional restrictions. One of the things that they really did take away from the RAC was the ability for them to meet on their subcommittees. So the RAC has one meeting, they have no subcommittees. So we don't want that kind of oversight, to invite that kind of oversight, because I think we do an awful lot of good work on bus rail and Metro Access and the other working groups that we have out there. So I really think we're in very good shape. I think you've seen the board at the meetings, and I think we're well received, and I think they get a good product from us. I think that they've always said that. So continue to go on until they tell us to stop.
Yeah, we have very good communication. The experience, again, when a major issue comes up at one of the subcommittees or at the major meeting, I have sent emails to Mr. Wiedefeld or to Mr. Spedberg or to operations folks. And within a day, sometimes the same day, I'll get an immediate response. So they are very responsive because we're not frivolous. I mean, that's one of the points that I've always made. We don't just complain. We point out a problem and we suggest a solution. And so as long as we continue to function in a positive solution way, I think we're doing fine.
Okay, very good. Steve Kafin sent out something related to scooters. And as a follow-up to the presentation that was made at our last meeting, that is regarding corrals for scooters so that they won't be piled up and be in the way of people trying to get to metro buses or stations. Steve, could you mention some follow-up based on what you read?
Absolutely.
Steve, before you start, this is Anu. Just a reminder, we only have 5 minutes.
Okay. I'm going to make this succinct, and then I have one sentence regarding the 42 bus. And with that sentence, I'll send you more details, Anu, so you can get them in the minutes, okay?
Great, thank you.
Are we going to have public comment? Because there was an issue related to bus and rail that I really needed to bring up.
Well, if we only have a few minutes. I think we ought to, you know, many people have sent out messages of condolence or thoughts and prayers. But I think we ought to mention here at this meeting that our friend and colleague and my mentor, Charlie Crawford, has passed away. And I was very distressed in hearing that. I don't think it was expected. He's a guy that when I first arrived at my first meeting, I just happened to sit next to him. And at my feet was his dog, Raisin. And I always thought Raisin, who was so calm and pleasant, I thought Raisin's name was spelled R-A-I-S-I-N, but it's R-A-Z-E-N. In any event, Charlie Crawford meant a lot to me, and I hope that we can plan some way of honoring his memory. Does anyone have any suggestions in the last 4 minutes of our meeting?
I second that, Tino. And one of the things that, if you'll permit me to do it, is to speak with Mr. Blake during the week as to something we might do for Brian and for Charlie, since we're not going to have an award ceremony this year. And there are some past traditions of the committee, and perhaps we can work out something ranging from a plaque to a certificate to notice at the board meeting, et cetera, et cetera. So if you'll permit me to speak with Mr. Blake later this week, and he's on the phone now, so he can call me or I can call him, and work out something we can do for both Brian and for Charlie. And I know Doris is going to talk to the Access for All group.
I do have some news about
and
that.
Patrick will talk to the Blind Maryland group about Charlie, so we can work on it from, you know, multiple directions.
Yes, please do.
I have some news about that. This is Doris.
Yes, Doris, your news.
Okay, my news is that there has been considerable response from the ALFA as well, and the chair of the ALFA is going to bring up Charlie's passing and call for a minute of silence during the TPB meeting, which will be this Wednesday. Usually, I believe they start at 10 a.m. I can find out, but she sent an email out to that effect over the weekend. And then they also plan in October at the AFA meeting to have a moment of silence. So all are invited to come to the ALFA meeting, which is usually from 10 to 12 on Wednesday, but I'm blanking out on the Wednesday that we will be taking this up, coming up. And so that's the news on Charlie, and I think I'd like to ask us perhaps to defer further, you know, plans or whatever we might want to bring to the WMATA board until the next AAC meeting. And last thing I do want to say is that I really do have something important to bring up about bus and rail service and being able to schedule your rides. And so if that could be at the very end, at least here to mention it, because it's something.
Mention it now because we only have 1 minute.
Okay, what it is that on Saturday, I tried to find out about bus schedules for the upcoming week to make probably my first trip out because our office is opening and the customer service line is shut down now. You can't get an operator over the weekend. And the question that I had was a more general question regarding when, you know, the limits of when my bus line was operating and what the headways were. And I think they need to bring back that service. I don't know whether this is a budget cut or whether it is just a COVID cut or what it is, but they've cut it out for the weekends. And I think if they're enhancing bus service, if they want to bring people back, they should reopen that. And if it's a budget thing, Phil, I think we need to bring this up because it's preventing people with disabilities and seniors from
being able to have any.
They need, and that's all. That's the end of my statement. Thank you.
Does staff
Please,
have
can
any
we do something about this?
Thank you. Does staff
thank
have
you.
Any comment? Quickly, does
this is Mary Beth speaking. The interpreters. We are at 6, and we need to excuse ourselves.
Thank you, Mary Beth. Tino, I will make a quick comment and then we would have to adjourn. Anyone needing to send any information, please email it to me and we will follow up. Any public comments can be left at 202-962-1100 or email at metroaacchair@wmata.com. Any members, please send your comments to me and I will share them.
Got it.
Okay, I'll send what I was going to say to you, Anu, okay?
Yes, thank you.
Sure, you're welcome. Thanks.
This is Phil.
Thank you,
everyone. I just got a text from Elder, and he has been attending the meeting. So when you do the attendance, mark him present.
I will. Thank you, Dr. Posner.
Thank you, Anu. Okay. Thank you, everyone.
Motion adjourned. We're adjourned. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.